Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel, and we're going to get into the Talking Metal podcast in just a second here. I wanted to remind you that I do have some other podcasts. There's the Talking Rock podcast, which I do with Joey Haney. There is the Mark Striegel podcast, which I do with Victor Ruiz. That Mark Striegel podcast is available exclusively to the people on Patreon. And yeah, so if you're interested in hearing that podcast, which is a weekly podcast, it comes out once a week, you can join me on Patreon with a pledge as little as $2 a month will get you in there. And yeah, it's just, I have so much fun with Victor doing the Mark Striegel podcast because it's just raw, you know, and off the hook. I probably say things I shouldn't say and wouldn't say anywhere else, but I know it's a small private group that get that podcast, and that's why there's so much freedom on it, and people seem to enjoy it. So I'd love for you guys to join Victor and I on the Mark Striegel podcast. Every week we do that, and that's exclusively for the people who support me on Patreon. A lot of other fun stuff on Patreon there. You can go check it out. It's patreon.com/talkingmetal. And so this, what we're going to hear today is the most recent Talking Metal live episode. Now, we had some technical difficulties, so it was technically live on Zoom, but the Facebook stream did not work for some reason. I'm not sure why, but luckily it was all recorded, and the video is up on YouTube right now. You can check it out. We have some great guests, Jeff Pilson of Foreigner, and Dokken fame and Dio fame. And man, I love his new record with Black Swan. It's so good. And we're going to talk all about Black Swan. It is one of my favorite rock records of the year. I sincerely mean that at this point. Really love the new Ozzy. Really love the new Black Swan record. Two great records. So we're going to talk to Jeff Pilson about Black Swan, among many other things. And then we got Dan Lorenzo from Vessel of Light. He's going to talk with us. And we end with Ryan Cook from Gene Simmons' band and also Ace Frehley's band. So stay tuned for all that. Of course, Ryan was also in, what's that? Hair of the Dog. Yeah, so good stuff. It was a good episode, even though no one, very few people saw it live. Let's just put it that way. So we're going to try to work out the kinks and hopefully be back live on Facebook this week, trying to get Michelangelo Badio to join us maybe this Friday. We'll see. Stay tuned. We'll figure that out. All right, guys. So here we go. Without further ado, the Talking Metal live stream. We'll get into it with some music by Black Swan featuring Jeff Pilson. This is a great tune, Divided/United by Black Swan. Starts off kind of slower, but then gets rocking in the middle. I love this song. Love this song. It closes the album by Black Swan, which is Shake the World, a really good release in 2020. Good. If you like the same type of music I do, you're going to like this record. Black Swan with Divided/United, followed by John Astronomy and I speaking with Jeff Pilson.
Been given everything under the sun. Guess you want it all before your time is done. Oh yeah, you'll never see it, your own impatience. that gives it away. No, you're never to blame, but you've crossed a line. We are so divided, can't you see? We are so divided, tragically.
Guys, it is Mark Striegel and John Astronomy of Talking Metal, and joining us here on our Zoom stream, legendary musician Jeff Pilson. Jeff, it is such an honor to speak with you always. The last time we spoke was in New Jersey at PNC Art Center. And
is it really?
Yeah, we had an interview, and that was with, I think, Whitesnake and Bonham that night. And Foreigner, always such an incredible show. And I mean, at that show specifically, just I got emotional, you know, hearing those songs that were, there's such a part of my life in front of probably like 15,000 people. It really, you guys do such a great job at recreating the original sound that Foreigner gave us on those records. And that's got to be hard to do. I mean, there's got to be a lot of detail that goes into replicating that sound.
Sure. And I mean, that's our job. Yeah. I mean, it's the thing about Foreigner, it is all about the nuance, you know. I mean, it sounds simple to some musicians, but it's the little things that make a difference. And I mean, that's what tripped up, like when we auditioned a lot of drummers. We auditioned some really great drummers that I know are great drummers, but they for some reason didn't connect with the subtleties and the little things. And it's kind of like that to some degree on all the instruments. And the music was very well thought out. You know, it really was. Those recordings were not made on the fly and real quick. You know,
they took
a lot of work, and they had great people and great producers. And you know, we're all fans of the recorded work and of the band in general. So we set out to do as good a job as we could. I mean, we didn't want to be personality-less with it. You know, we wanted to let ourselves come through, and Mick always wants that from us. But we wanted to stay very true to what we all loved about it. And I think that's what we do. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because it means a lot to us.
Yeah, and I sincerely mean that, and I sincerely mean this too. The Shake the World record by Black Swan, one of the greatest rock records so far in 2020. And I started listening to it back a few months ago when I interviewed Robin, and at that time it was just like the first three songs. I kept playing them over and over again because they're so good. But now I've dug deep into the record, and I mean, the way that record closes, it's so powerful. I mean, it's really a good listen all the way through. Can you talk a little bit about Black Swan and who did the record?
All you want, man. I'm still very, very excited about it.
So tell us who's in the band with you. Obviously, you and Robin McCauley.
So Robin McCauley on vocals. Robin, who, you know, has been with Michael Schenker forever and had the Michael Schenker group in the 80s and early 90s. And Reb Beach on guitar, Whitesnake, winger. Just a brilliant bunch of guys and a brilliant writer. Matt Starr, amazing drummer, Mr. Yep. Big, Ace Frehley. He unfortunately came in towards the end, so all he really did was play drums on the record, but at least he did a hell of a job of that. Next record, we plan on doing a lot more with Matt, because he's a very talented guy in his own right, has an amazing voice. And, you know, should we ever play live, we are going to have the most frightening background vocals on the planet, I guarantee you.
Right on. Matt is so good. Ace has him sing songs like Detroit Rock City, Paul Stanley songs that are very hard to sing, and Matt can pull it off.
He's truly a great lead singer in his own right. I mean, it's incredible. So that's why I do hope someday so much that, you know, we can go out and play live, because that would just be what a rockin' band it'd be. And like I say, the background vocals would be, all the vocals would just be ridiculous. So hoping that happens. But yes, Black Swan, It was an idea that kind of was spawned by me having a conversation with Serafino from Frontiers, the head of the label. And, you know, we wanted to do a super group kind of along the lines of what I had done with the M Machine the year before. And I knew I was going to be touring with Reb. So Reb's name came up, and immediately Serafino said, see if you can make it happen. So I asked Reb, and Reb said, does it mean I get to write with you? And I said, yes. And he goes, I'll do it, which is
so
great.
So this, when you said you were touring with Reb, is this the tour I was referring to? The Whitesnake tour? Okay.
Yeah, we were just on that tour when Serafino approached me about this. So that's when I hit up Reb about it. And yeah, that was summer of 18, which feels like forever ago. And once Reb was on board, Robin's name came to mind, one, because Robin's a dear friend of mine, and two, because I've always thought he was very underrated, and to give him an opportunity to really shine and show people what he's capable of was very exciting for me. So I asked Robin, and Robin, when he said yes, I knew we had something really solid. It took us a while to find Matt, but we started writing and recording before that, so made a lot of great progress fairly effortlessly. I mean, put in a lot of time and work, but it was all fun, and it all was very smooth, and everybody just put in their 150%, and I couldn't be more pleased with the results.
Yeah, again, the album is Shake the World by Black Swan. And, you know, I mentioned the closing of the album, and maybe it's just everything that's been going on in the world, but the song's like Unless We Change and Divided United, which has this amazing break in the middle where it just kind of shifts gears. I don't know what those songs are about, but just with everything in the world right now, it almost made me feel like it could be, you know, interpreted in these times.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you try to write timeless material. That's one thing. I mean, I'd love to say that we were prophets and we knew that all this was going to happen, but certainly we didn't. What we did know is there is a lot of division and there is a lot of reason for needing to change. I think we all agree on that. To some degree or another. And it was just written from the heart. That was the observations that we saw. We wanted to reflect it in the music. I mean, you know, listen, I don't want to get overly political with something like Black Swan or overly topical, but it is nice when you feel something really strongly. It's very nice to have an outlet to write about. And that just, it all just kind of came out naturally. And like I say, very excited about how it all turned out.
So, Jeff, I wanted to ask you, now, did you record everything in your studio, Pilsound?
Yes, everything was recorded there.
Now, I saw something online where you were giving everybody a tour of the studio. And let me tell you, I am a gear fanatic. So I was in heaven. Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking at all those heads you got behind. You know, those are amazing. And then you had so many guitars that were great, basses from the 50s. Like, I got a lot of cool guitars, but most of these are like 70s and, you know, current. Now, one of the things that I thought was amazing was that the Mellotron.
Yes.
Not everybody even knows what a Mellotron is, but a Mellotron is a cool keyboard, listeners, that can do a bunch of different things, and you know it when you hear it. Now, you got a Mellotron that Foreigner rented off of you.
Yes.
Long before it was on, like, layaway. It was like on layaway, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell like, that story to the listeners.
Let me see. 27 years before I joined the band. Or 26, I guess. I was buying this Mellotron from American Music in Seattle. And yeah, of course I was a broke musician, you know, but a big prog guy, and Mellotrons are very, you know, they were very, very in vogue in prog bands. They were almost a necessity in a prog band. And I always wanted one my entire life. Anyways, got this one from American Music, was making payments. And in the summer of 78, Foreigner came through Seattle and they called American Music because when the plane landed, apparently the box that had their Mellotron in it just crunched it. And they are they're pretty temperamental. You know, they're not great touring instruments, to be honest with you. There's, you know, the digital replacements of nowadays are far better for that. But, you know, in the 70s, you had to do what you had to do. So they called American Music and they said, do you have a Mellotron for rent? And they said, well, we do, but we've actually sold it. Let's call the guy and ask him if he'd rent it to you. So they called me and they said, hey, Foreigner wants to rent your Mellotron. Are you up for that? And I said, yeah. They said, yeah, they'll get you into the show. I went, great. Because, you know, of course I was broke, so I wouldn't have been able to afford to go to the show. So anyway, when I walked into Veterans Stadium, as I was walking in, and this is not This is true. The truth of the story. They were playing the part in Cold as Ice that has the strings, which they were doing on the Mellotron. So I walked into the stadium hearing my Mellotron over this gigantic PA. And I was
amazing.
And it was very funny. And that's a story that when I told Mick Jones that, he couldn't stop laughing. He just thought that was the most
amazing.
And it really is. I mean, think of how serendipitous that is. Yeah. Of all the people, I mean, they had had some problems with Mellotrons before. They had never just cold called a music store to rent.
Right.
So what are the odds that the guy that they would rent from 26 years later would be in the band? I mean, that's a pretty cool story.
It's amazing. And
it is.
What I also think is just as amazing is, like, you've been in the band for probably about 15 or so years now. Is that correct?
16, but who's counting?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, but that's such a great story. And then I'm going to let Mark has like a ton of like relevant questions, but I love these beer questions. Now, one other thing I want to ask you about that amazing 12 string that Tom Petty and all these other people like used to use. And then you finally got it.
Want me to go grab it?
Yeah, grab it. Yeah,
right, I love it too. So yes, this is a 1964 Fender Electric 12.
Wow.
I'll just put it on this for a second. It is actually the same, not the exact same guitar, but the same kind of guitar that Page played on Stairway to Heaven, you know, at the end. You know, that stuff. Anyway.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
It's in such great condition. It's amazing.
Well,
it's like,
okay, I bought it from this rental place, and it was a rental place that I used to rent from a lot in the 90s called Andy Brower Rental. Great studio rental place here in LA. And Andy just took great care of his gear. He found really great gear. And I used to rent this, like I say, a lot in the 90s. And I would always say, I got to get that 12 string from you. And he'd always say, yeah, you and Petty and Harrison and Dylan, they've all offered to buy it from me. You know, they throw money at me. I'm not selling. And then of course, several years later, he called me out of the blue and he said, hey, still want that 12 string? And I was like, yes. So I might've paid a little more than market price for it at the time, but it was so worth it to me.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful guitar. It has so much history. Plus, it's going to have more history because you're going to use it on all the recordings that you do that needs a 12 string.
Well, I have been for years. I mean, I know on the TNN record, George played it a bunch, and the Lynch Pilsen record, he played it. The End Machine record, he played it. I mean, yeah, we've used it a lot over the years.
That's great.
Notice I had to think about which bands I was
in. Yeah, you have a lot going on. End Machine.
What was the name of that thing again?
Robert Mason, right, did the vocals on that. It was another great, great album that you did rather recently. And, of course, we were talking about Black Swan, which is Robin McCauley on vocals. Now, you worked briefly with him back in MSG, right, with the McCauley-Shacker group. Right?
Yeah, I in 91... James Kotak and I were the bass player and drummer for the MSG record that we did that year. And it was just one of those instant chemistry things. We just, you know, I mean, we'd spend a lot of time just Shanker and James and I just jamming, you know, and it was so much fun because Shanker's so great, you know, and he was, you know, he's a wacky guy, but I love him to pieces and he's such a great player. And once you get into the playing zone with him, it's not wacky at all. It seems right. You know, so it was just fabulous. And during the making of that record, that's when I really became close friends with Robin. And, we've remained so ever since. I was the best man in his wedding. That was where I first worked with Robin. And I mean, I was just so impressed by him. I remember when we were recording the record, as we were doing every single take, he would sing full out every time because he wanted each take to have the maximum vocal energy to spur us on. And it was like, superhuman to watch him work. I mean, I was so blown away by that. The only other guy I've ever seen do that is Dio. Ronnie used to do that too when we would be doing takes. He would just be a superhuman guy back there singing.
And Black Swan sounds, you know, on paper, you see, you know, Winger, Dokken, these different names, like as the groups you guys come from, but it sounds more like Dio to me than any of those, which, I mean, you were with Dio for...
Yeah, although I did not invent the Dio sound by any means.
At times, especially those first few songs on the record, definitely have that Dio vibe.
Yeah, and it's funny because when Robin sang me the melody for Shake the World, which is the opening song. When he sang it to me, I went, wow, that sounds so much like Ronnie. He goes, really? So he wasn't even aware of it, but it must have been an unconscious thing on his part. I think part of it is just hearing somebody with that kind of power, singing heavy, but still very melodic.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and he's got the rasp in his voice. So, you know, it kind of can't help but sort of have a little bit of that going. It's funny. I mean, I hear Dio in spots, but I kind of hear, I guess the whole sound of the band kind of reminds me of a morph between Dio and Whitesnake. And there's kind of like a morph of all those kind of things that, I mean, honestly, we didn't even really set out to do anything but create good songs, and we kind of stumbled upon a sound while we were doing it, and that's pretty cool.
And you know, your time in Dio, you did a lot with him, you know, going all the way from like what 93 through like 2004. Are there any completed songs in the vault that haven't been heard from your time with Dio?
Completed songs, I don't think so.
Okay.
I still have a handful of tapes, but the last time I checked, they were all stuff that did actually end up being finished. I know that there is unreleased Dio music that exists, and Wendy is working on trying to put that into, trying to kind of save the files as they were, because they were in an early digital stage that he was doing. So this would have been after Master of the Moon. He was writing some stuff with Craig Goldie. And I know that they saved it on some digital platforms. I know she's working on she's already started working on it. So it's going to get saved. And at some point, that stuff will come out. I've only heard little snippets of it, but I got to guess there's some great stuff in there.
Yeah. Anything that Dio's involved with is usually great. And of course, Last in Line was kind of Dio's band that got back together in more recent years. You produced two great records for them. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Vivian said he's already thinking of a third record for Last.
No, they've already started writing. They, I'm not going to be producing the next one, okay. But I just talked to Vivian the other day. No, they've got six songs. They actually started demoing them. I think it was in January or something, January or February. But they didn't get to finish it because this whole thing happened. They've already started writing. I know, looks like they've got, I know they've got some offers from other labels. So I think, have a feeling something good will come along and a great third record is probably on its way.
Awesome.
Jeff, I wanted to ask you, when did you start getting involved in the recording process, engineering, gear? Like back in the old Dokken days, were you, like when you guys recorded, were you involved in that? Or did this happen gradually?
No, I've always loved it. Actually, and it's odd because when I joined Dokken, for one thing, they made it very clear to me that they wanted to use my musicality. You know, they had heard demos and stuff. You know, I submitted stuff. So it wasn't just about playing or stage presence. It was, and singing. Singing was a big deal.
That too. Right.
But they wanted the whole package, you know? And that's one thing why I always try to explain to people, as many ego problems as there were in Dokken, where one thing where ego just did not stand in the way was when it came to really dealing with songwriting and everything, everybody was encouraged to put their input in. Nobody was stepped on ever. It really was. Wow. It was really from day one, they made it clear to me. So, and you know, I think I've told the story many times. I mean, the first day George ever came over to my house, the first day, I'd probably been in the band a week or something. I don't know. But anyways, he came over, we were going to go do something. And he walked in the door. He saw my guitar. I had a little guitar sitting on a stand. He picked it up. And we wrote a song. First day we ever. I don't think it was anything we ended up keeping, but we might have come up with a part or two that did. But I mean, that's how instantaneous it was.
That's great. That is such a cool thing to hear. You know, especially with everything that people might think about how the inner workings of Dokken was. The cool thing was when it came to the music. Everybody was encouraged to do their thing. And what I think is great is that part of what you brought to it was your expertise in the studio.
Well, and that's one of the other bizarre things is, you know, when we got to doing the Tooth and Nail record, which is the first record I did with them, of course, we had, you know, the writing pre-production was very good. But when we got in the studio, you know, the producer that we had did a couple songs with Don. One of them was a song that ended up not making the record and we ended up rewriting years later. But anyway, the producer came to me at one point. He said, you know what? You deal with Don. And he wasn't even there when most of the vocals for Tooth and Nail were recorded. It was just the engineer, myself, and Don. Wow. And it was when I think back, and again, you think about we were supposed to be these weird ego guys. They were extremely inviting to me, you know, to let me do all this stuff. I mean, Dom, at the time, Dom was already considered, you know, a pretty cool producer around town. So he could have told me to go screw myself. But he was like, he was just very, very, he wanted somebody to, you know, to bounce
that's
off of.
That's so cool. I mean, to me, that's so cool because I hear stories so much about people fighting in the studio and just, you know, wanting it their way. And the fact that Don, who was already, like you said, an established producer around town, just was, to you, a newer guy, go for it and let you do produce all. Basically, you produced the vocals on that record.
Basically. I mean, for the most part, yeah. And I mean, it was, yeah, like when I think back on it, it's just very odd how much he trusted me. And you know, we were happy. We knew we were getting good results and he knew that I was a hard worker. And I think that kind of made it a difference too. But I was just soaking up things like a sponge because, you know, we were working with an engineer that had recorded, you know, Queen and the Cars and, you know, Journey and all this stuff. So I was
so amazing.
Yes. And I befriended him, did a lot of drugs with him too, but, but we became very close and I just started learning so much. So from now on, I mean, on the Under Lock and Key record, I probably produced a couple of the vocals, but Neil Kernan really did most of them on that record. And certainly on Back for the Attack. But by Back for the Attack, I wasn't in the studio as much when Don was recording his vocals. Some, but not all. Not like with Tooth and Nail. Tooth and Nail was the one that I really kind of had to, you know, but I wanted to do it. So it was great. But I was totally involved in all aspects of the studio from day one. Cause I've loved it. I've always loved it. And you know, producing was always something I wanted to do.
And Jeff, before we let you go, it has been 35 years since Under Lock and Key. It's the tour I first saw you on, opening for Priest. The Turbo tour, you guys were out on the road with them. Any quick memories you could share about that record, going into the studio to produce it and work on it?
Yeah. You know, we were feeling pretty strong at that point. You know, Tooth and Nail had gone gold. So we still didn't feel like, you know, we knew that Motley and Rat, you know, were selling more records than us. And so we were still pretty hungry. And the work, the pre-production work for Under Lock and Key was really strong. I mean, we had really worked on the writing, and everybody was really, really there, very present for the pre-production and the recording. And it was fun, very, very productive. And then I just remember when we got really into the trenches of working, I'll never forget the night that we did the vocal to the song that never saw the light of day, but the song called Under Lock and Key. And it was the music that became Unchain the Night. And Don had done a whole vocal with the song Under Lock and Key. You know, something he pretty much wrote. And we got, you know, we did the vocal. In fact, I think I was there for that. Or at least I came later or something. Anyways, but George came in later. I think it was after Don left. And he goes, wow, man, that's just not happening. I'm like, yeah, you don't think so? And he goes, no, man, we got to do something. And I lived not far from the studio. So, all right, let's go to my house. So we went to my house. I remember we stayed up all night. And by the end of the night, we had written Unchain the Night. And we were very excited about it. So in the next morning, you know, we were still up, but the next morning we called the producers and we said, we got to go in and do a scratch on this song real quick. Like, we rewrote it and like, okay. So we went in and I did a scratch for it. And then we played it for Don, and Don was kind of, you know, reluctant at first, but then he was like, yeah, it's better. It's better. Right.
Wow.
And so he had to sing Unchain the Night, which, and I was so impressed with how well he did that. And just, I mean, he really owned it, which is which is pretty amazing.
Now, was it just you and George doing the writing at your house, or was Don there too?
Yeah. No, it was just George and I.
Wow.
So we, yeah, because he and I wrote, actually, by the end of the day, he and I wrote the whole song because we had already written the music. There was a couple of spots, though, like the Never was part of his Under Lock and Key song. So that somehow, because the song was called Never Unchain the Night, so it somehow worked to keep the Never in there. So there was a couple spots from the original vocal that were kept. But yeah, I mean, things like that. Same thing kind of happened with It's Not Love, although It's Not Love, we always knew we were going to write the vocal to, but it was just magical. And it took place in my apartment, and I remember it very well. And I remember same thing happened. We called him up and said, we got to do a scratch. And this time Mick was with us to do the scratch. And so, yeah, fun times, man. It was really fun.
And it's so fun to hear the stories you've told me in the past about, you know, fixing your sprinklers with Dio and all those. All the time. We love hearing the rock history from a true legend, Jeff Pilson. Thank you, Jeff, for all the great music through the years. And like I said, I've interviewed you a number of times in person, and my fingers are crossed that the next interview we do will be soon and in person again.
Yeah.
And I'm going to come too. I'm going to come too this time.
There you go. Well, me too, Martin. Thank you guys. Always appreciate being here. And yeah, let's hope the world of concerts starts up again soon.
Back up again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jeff, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Sorry about the technical issues, and we hope to see you soon.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon. Stay healthy.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, you too, Jeff. Thank you.
Take care, everybody.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Pilson of Dio, Dokken, Foreigner, Black Swan. That Black Swan record really is good, John. So we are right now waiting for – I'm getting – dozens of texts here from people saying we're not live. What's going on?
I know.
We'll just have to.
I'll try it again.
Yeah, I guess maybe as if you want to. Oh, there's Dan. I can start things off with Dan.
I think Dan. Hey, Dan.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
How are you, Dan?
Good. How are you?
Good. We got started a little late today due to some technical issues. So
we're not live.
5 minutes.
Oh my God, Dan, that is amazing. Dan, I love it.
Mark, you couldn't see it?
No, I did see it. It was awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. The Talking Metal shirt. You guys can hear me okay? I just got a weird note saying my mic stopped. But
Dan, I love that video that you sent me of you guys doing or Vessel of Light doing the Black Sabbath cover. That is amazing.
Thank you, John. That's our new video, Wasp. You know, we just put it out for fun, being as everything is pretty much shut down. We released that after we released our third album, Thy Serpent Rise, which came back out in April. And we were actually doing shows when this whole lockdown happened. We were doing like a little
right up to the cusp of the
unbelievable
lockdown.
Yeah,
you guys were out there gigging in New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah, and New York, and people were. You know, I wasn't. Can you hear me right now?
Yeah.
Okay. you know, I was shaking hands like this on the first night. It was we played the Brighton Bar down the shore, and people were still like going to shake my hands and hug and kiss. I'm like, no, man, not now. And then people, like the next night, people started talking like, oh, some people aren't going to come because of the coronavirus. I'm like, oh, great. And then the next night, it's like more people saying that they're afraid. Oh, yeah, like you, Mark, right?
Yeah, that was me.
So at least we got in a couple shows right before the whole shutdown, you know?
Yeah. And you told me some amazing news. Like you said, I mean, your third album just recently came out. But because of this, yeah, there we go, The Serpent Rise. Nice. Because of this, Thy Serpent Rise, sorry, there is new material in the works, right? Can you tell us about what's going on with new Vessel of Light material?
So the first time I ever did this was Woodshed. Then I did it for Thy Serpent Rise. And now I did it for the first album. And I mean, for the fourth album. What that is record all my guitars first to a click track. I had never done that before until Woodshed. You know, being as Nathan lives in Cleveland, you know, we don't jam, we don't rehearse. But now, even though Jimmy Shulman and Ron Lipnicki are in the band, so the way I do it is I've recorded 17 songs for the next record, you know, to a click, just me and my guitars and a click.
Wow.
And now Ron's come in and recorded drums too. I think Ron did 15 of the new songs. And Jimmy and Nathan are finishing their parts. They're going to go record next month. So if it wasn't for the coronavirus, I'd be playing basketball every day. And there wouldn't be a new VOL record out until like January or February. But now we're so far ahead of schedule. I mean, I feel like I could release the fifth album next year, but we'll release the fourth one probably in September or October, at least digitally. Wow. And on CD. The vinyl probably won't come out until January, but, you know.
So potentially two Vessel of Light albums in 1 year. I mean, that's like back in the 70s. Remember, like, Led Zeppelin and Kiss, they would release two albums in the same year. You know?
Nathan and I met the first time 3 years ago, the end of this month. So we're going to finish four records. Wow. Or almost be finished with four records since we met 3 years ago.
That's amazing. Now, Dan, so I saw Nathan when I was in Ohio last year.
Right.
And we hung out at an Ace Frehley Leica gig. And then I saw you guys at Dingbats.
To come see you play.
No. I saw you guys at Dingbats, but then I came to see Vessel of Light at Dingbats.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
All right.
I brought the drummer from Like It, Mike Lincoln, and I got in, and we totally saw Vessel of Light. That was at Dingbats, right?
We did play Dingbats twice,
It was doing like a three-show thing. You had one in Jersey, one in Connecticut, and maybe one other gig somewhere.
Yeah, we played the New England Doomfest, the New England Stoner and Doomfest. John, your voice is dropping out a little bit. Mark, you hear him all right? Can you hear me?
Yeah. He's fading a little bit. Yeah, John. Okay. Just make sure you.
Okay. Not sure what's the story on that, but
It's just really, really faint. I'm not exactly sure what happened, John. But so, Dan, the direction of the newer material similar to what we've heard in the past, or?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you always want to be diverse. I'm definitely doing some things. Like, I wrote a song a few weeks ago that didn't have an augmented fourth in it, which was really like pretty amazing for me. I wrote a few songs on this next record that aren't even really tuned down for, like the E string is a D, which for me is not that far tuned down. And there's some songs that are definitely a little bit like that approach the 5 minute mark, where almost everything we've done together so far as Vessel of Light is 3.5 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes tops. There's a couple songs on the next record that are, you know, at the 5 minute mark, but it's really heavy, really angry. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody's gonna be shocked, but there's a few things like I wrote this riff and I said, you know, I was trying to map it out to the click track, and Ron Lipnicki told me, oh, it's 6/4 timing. I'm like, oh, all right. I didn't even know I wrote in 6/4 timing. So it's really exciting. It's great. I love it. I'm so happy with the band, you know?
And do you envision then more gigs in when things clear up in 2021? Yeah. Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, we were supposed to play 5 shows this month. We were supposed to play the Maryland Doom Fest. We were going to do a little run down in Delaware with Blackwater Rising, Brooklyn, and Jersey again. But the Maryland Doom Fest, was for June 19th. So obviously that's not happening. And that was postponed to like the night before Halloween. And I'm starting to worry that even that's not going to happen now. So whenever we're allowed to play again, we'll start playing again, you know?
John? I don't know. I guess we can't. I don't know what's happening to your mic, John. You're fading.
Not working at all.
I mean, it's just very, very quiet. But yeah. So when you look back on some of your entire career, are you more excited? It seems like you're really, really excited by the Vessel of Light stuff. And I mean, you've had some amazing stuff that you've done in the past, like The Cursed with Bobby Blitz. And, you know, I was a massive fan of Nonfiction and, of course, the Hades. But is there an excitement, a fire in you with Vessel of Light that you maybe didn't have with some of your other projects? Or is that
a little? I mean, I feel like I found the perfect writing partner with Nathan, but also I guess I never expected to do this. I mean, when I discovered Ancient Wisdom, I guess it was about 3.5 years ago, I hadn't played guitar. I'd only play guitar in the winter for, you know, occasionally play along with some old Kiss and Aerosmith records, AC/DC records. I really wasn't trying to be in a band. I guess the last Hades show we did was in Germany with Twisted Sister and Queensryche in 2010. We played the Bang Your Head Festival. I think we did one show the year after that. But I really just wasn't even playing guitar. I had a bunch of riffs laying around, which eventually became the first Vessel of Light EP. I wrote a couple new ones when I met Nathan. But yeah, I can't tell you both. It's, I mean, like, John, you know, you were out of it for a long time, and then you get back into it, and you're obsessed with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Can you guys hear me now?
Perfectly, perfectly.
Okay, good, good.
Much, yeah, much better, much better. So that would be amazing. I mean, we're hoping that everything kind of returns back to normal sooner than later. You know, I did see you're in the tattoo business too, which I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
Tattoo parlors, June 22nd in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Any comments on that? Any thoughts about that?
Well, my wife calls him Overlord Murphy. You're allowed to do pretty much everything else. You can go in the street and riot, but you're not allowed to have a one-on-one, you know, session in a tattoo shop with masks. It was all very confusing. And it seems like there's one set of rules for certain people and another set for others. So, I mean, they initially didn't even say tattoo shops were going to be open in the first phase of phase two. I don't know why they have so many different phases. I mean, they have so few phases when they seem to be, it's just ridiculous the way they do it. Tattoo shops. I work for a company called Painful Pleasures. We sell tattoo supplies all over the world. And tattoo shops have always been a really safe place. You know, even I got a bloodborne pathogen test a few years ago, and I realized how much safety is involved in the tattoo business. So it was kind of silly that certain things were open and tattoo shops weren't. But like you said, June 22nd, they reopened in Jersey. So that's great.
Now, Dan, I wanted to ask you, since we all live in Jersey and I've been to your place, are you going out and doing your normal business? I mean, not work, but like going to the store, you're wearing masks or gloves or what? Or, you know, what are you doing? Because I'm at the point, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I wear the mask, but I'm not concerned that I'm going to get coronavirus anymore. Whereas at one point, I was heavily concerned and I had gloves and masks and everything. Now I don't even care.
Yeah, the same as you pretty much. But, you know, obviously, you know, we can't play shows. We couldn't have band rehearsals. I stopped playing basketball, which I love. And now there's
I know, Dan, you love playing basketball.
Yeah, and there's people playing hoops. But my wife and I, Gina, we're leaving for Key West a week from Sunday. I don't want to get sick before then. But now, John, like you said, I mean, a month and a half ago, I was literally picking up apples in my Uncle Giuseppe's with a Lysol wipe. You know, like I was really being crazy about it, because the media tries to, that's the job, is to scare you to get good ratings. And I, you know, I believe the disease is real. When people say the whole thing is a hoax, that's not true. But, you know, the percentage of people who have it and will never know they have it, if you add that into everybody they tested, the mortality rate is probably under 1%. And I know anybody who dies is sad, but I can't tell you, I honestly, like, I'm going to shed a tear if 103-year-old person
dies. 1%, it's like 4%, though. I've heard it was 5.5 in New Jersey.
But if you add in all the people who are asymptomatic, who never got tested.
Hang on for one second, guys.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
But yeah, I personally, we've emailed back and forth. I think Governor Murphy's doing an awesome job with this.
Really?
I think he's doing incredible. Going to Florida, a state where it's still going up and up. They announced today some of their highest levels. So I just think, John. Sorry.
That's all right.
Complete disaster tonight, technically.
That's okay. What Lakers shirt are you wearing? Is that Kobe?
No, it's James, LeBron James. All right, let's pick it up. Speaking of, you just mentioned the shirt I got on, the Lakers shirt. Have you seen, I know, do you watch, you play basketball, but do you watch basketball?
Not anymore, right? Yeah, I do. I used to watch the Knicks. I used to be the biggest Knicks fan, and I'm so disgusted with them. You know, it's just like they've been so bad for so long, and their owners, you know, I don't know if he's doing the wrong thing. He picks the wrong people, that's for sure. You're wearing a Lakers shirt. I really didn't like when Phil Jackson came here because I'm a big Jeff Van Gundy guy, but I haven't been watching a lot of the Knicks even before the coronavirus.
Well, the documentary on ESPN, The Last Dance, you should check that out. We watched it. It was just so, whether you like the Bulls or not.
Oh, yeah.
An amazing, amazingly well done documentary.
Yeah, well, I loved it. I watched every episode, and I respect Jordan more than ever after watching that. Like, I know he said he thought he came off bad and people were getting mad at him. I like him more, man, after watching that. I thought the whole thing was amazing. You know?
Right, right. Yeah, me too. They did a great job with that. And when you look back on pre-Vessel of Light material for you, because there's, like I said, there's been a lot of it. You've had your solo record.
Hey, guys, I'm back.
Your stuff with Hades and Nonfiction. Which releases, which albums specifically rise to the top as some of your favorites?
I would say The Cursed Room Full of Sinners with Blitz, Nonfiction in the Know, and Hades the Downside. Those would be my three by my other projects. And of course, all my solo albums got to go right now.
Right.
Yeah, those three.
How many solo albums? Three? Three solo albums.
Three.
Yeah. Three, right. Cassius.
You know what? Yeah, Cassius King.
Right.
Go ahead, Mark. I was just going to say, Dan, I think of, you probably wouldn't think of this, this is just a personal thing between us, but because of the Cassius King album, I think of you all the time, because for some reason that phrase, Cassius King, and then the way you spelled it on the record, comes into my mind. So I'll be walking in the New York City subway and I'll be thinking, Cassius King, Dan Lorenzo. So, like, you might not know this, but there's somebody thinking about your album and you all the time.
Thank you, Johnny. I mean, you wouldn't know, you don't respond to my text when I release the nicer.
I'm good now. Don't I respond now? I respond now.
Now that you're locked indoors for 24 hours a day.
I was caught up with too much of an overload.
I hear you. Hey, you got me backstage for Ace Frehley. I won't forget that, so don't worry.
Okay.
And of course, I tell you, it wasn't a record, but the damn Screaming Metal video I told you I watched the other night, those two shows were fun as hell we all did together.
But we did great. I would be willing, I'd be willing to beg you to do another show with us. I mean, like, I loved playing those gigs. So you put a band together,
right
hand, me and Mark will play.
My right hand, I can't pick down fast anymore. I was doing push-ups for about a year and a half, 2 years straight, and my right wrist still prevents me from playing a lot of more up-tempo songs. Thank God I play in the Doom Band now, you know?
Well, we can work it out, so we'll work it. I'll pick the faster parts. You can pick like slower.
All right. Well, Dan, thank you so much for checking in with us. Where's the best place people can get on in touch with you online?
Oh, just my website, danlorenzo.net. If you want to buy the Vessel of Light CD, Thy Serpent Rise, you can buy it from my website, Amazon, iTunes, Amazon Music, CD Baby. You know, it's pretty much everywhere. So I'm hoping people check out Vessel of Light, Thy Serpent Rise. I know you guys have been big supporters, and I greatly appreciate.
Yes, yes. And for the podcast version of this, we can play a song right now. So what song would you like to play for the
Why don't you play
podcast version?
Rush of Blood would be
you
nice.
Got it. Rush of Blood by Vessel of Light here on Talking Metal. Dan Lorenzo, you're welcome anytime. Please come back soon.
Love you guys.
Love the music. And thanks for consistently, you know, giving us so much good music through the years. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
All right. Be safe.
Tell Gina we said hello.
I will. Thanks, Johnny. See you, Mark.
Bye-bye. thanks to Dan Lorenzo and to Jeff Pilsen. And right now, our next guest is the one and only Ryan Spencer Cook of all my favorite bands, the Ace Frehley Band, the Gene Simmons Band, Hair of the Dog, Big Rock Show. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm so happy to be here. I can't stand it. How are you guys?
We're good, Ryan. So nice to see you. I've seen you play live with Ace a number of times, and it's nice to finally talk with you. Let's start off with you two guys. Where did you first meet?
Do you remember?
Let's see, Ryan? It would have been probably was on a Kiss cruise or Kiss convention, right, John?
You know what? So I would have normally guessed that, but it was Jeremy, I think, or Phil, who said that we met first in St. Paul, Minnesota at the Matter event. Remember that? Now, that was a charity event that That's you right. guys did. You played in the stadium with Gene Simmons. It was Gene Simmons Band, Cheap Trick, Don Felder of the Eagles, which you were the backup band for, Flip, a bunch of great bands.
That's right.
And then Ace joined you guys. And so that's when I first met you, according to those other dudes. But real quick, before we do that, I just got to tell you, I see Kiss in 1974 in the background there on your TV. You see that?
Yeah, you do.
That's great. So anyway, we mentioned that Matter event. We met at that Matter event. We had a great time. Tell everybody about that. And then, Ryan, I want to get into a lot of stuff that I heard from the other guys about how you put all of this together. But why don't you share your memories on the Matter event?
Okay, first of all, on the Matter event was so great. It was a lot of fun. We've been playing with Gene for a long time at that point. Well, not a real long time. But the cool thing was being asked to play for this event, Gene told us, he said, you know, guys, there's a really good chance that Ace Frehley is going to come join us tonight. And Philip and Jeremy and I were so thrilled about this and loved the idea. And it was so awesome. And little did we know or remember, we had to remember, it was basically, that was the first time in 13 years that Gene and Ace would share the stage together. As Kiss fans, it was amazing. You were there, PJ was there, and it was such a great night, and we had such a good time, and everybody just kind of got together to try to make such a good night happen, which was awesome. And the cool thing was, though, as Kiss fans, like all of us are, everybody wondered how it would be to have those two guys together. And you representing Ace as you did, and PJ was there as well. It was just so nice to know that those guys picked up exactly where they left off a long time ago, just being in the same band together, which I loved so much. And to be able to do songs with Gene and Ace together was just, I mean, come on. I was high-fiving my 8-year-old self the whole entire
yeah,
night.
Yeah, no, that was an amazing experience for even me, just being on the side of the stage when those guys were together on stage. And you guys are so good. And everybody knows this, but just in case anybody who's watching this is not aware, you, Jeremy, and Phil are an amazing combination. And
these
guys came in, Ace came in, no rehearsals, no anything. And you guys just knocked it out of the park.
Right.
And it really was a baseball
Thank
park.
You.
And it was just a great gig. And
it was. You know, how great was it? How great was it that we were in a baseball park that night with Cheap Trick? Thank you.
Right.
It was great. Yeah.
It was amazing. It was a dream come true for all of us who, when we were kids in the 70s, that would have been our dream gig to go to, Kiss and Cheap Trick.
Absolutely.
So, and then what people really don't even know is that the very next night, you guys did it again in a private place, which is really in an airplane hangar. And you know, you guys were playing with Don Felder of the Eagles. I mean, like, amazing people. Yep. Just to see everybody there together at the time, I mean, it was a great time for music. It was a great time for the Matter charity. Everybody should look that up. It's called Matter, M-A-T-T-E-R. And we just had a great 2 or 3 days together. and it was cool. So I'm going to turn it over to Mark, and then I'm going to come back and ask you another question.
Okay, Mark, great.
I want to ask you about your history and who some of your influences besides Kiss growing up. But before we get there, what is you play in Ace's band, you play in Gene's band. What would you say are some of the major differences between you playing in those bands? And what are some of the major similarities?
Sure. I'll start with the differences. I'll tell you this immediately. I love both of those guys so much because of the opportunity that we've had. Gene, I'll start with him. We could do anything we wanted on any given night, meaning if it was Chuck Berry, if it was Dynasty, if it was Unmasked, if it was whatever, we would go, hey, Gene, will you try this? And he would go, he never told us no. And he would always say, I would like to, well, what? I'll try it. I'd like to, okay. He never told us no. I love that. Difference with that Ace. Crazy. Oh, God, are you kidding me? Difference with Ace was we were very Seabiscuit. Okay?
Right.
Meaning that Ace had something cut and dried that we would start, we would learn, we'd figure it out. Every once in a while, we would change a song, but Ace was very much a creature of habit. It's the word Gene was not and would do something different every night. I loved it both ways because, number one, I'm going to tell you guys something that you both understand. My friends and I got to play with half of the original Kiss lineup.
Amazing.
Right, right.
I'm going to tell you that we're not more important than anybody. We never have been. We never thought that. But I will tell you, I know a million people that I'm aware of a million people in the world that would love to play with half of Kiss.
Correct.
And I love that so much. And I'm so grateful for that every day. All the time. I love it. But the thing was,
what's really interesting about that, and coming from a person who's been with you guys on the road, one would think that it, you know, maybe for the casual fan, you might think it would be the opposite. You might think that Gene is the straightforward guy. He wants everything a certain way. And that Ace is sort of like the, maybe, you know, the guy who's having a lot of fun on the road. But it's the opposite. Gene right. was the guy who was willing to just say, oh, we'll try Charisma tonight, or we'll do some
always
your song. But but it was – so Gene was willing to just kind of go for it, whereas Ace was more structured, always. Which is not Ace's sort of Kiss reputation. So that was pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah.
What a neat thing.
Completely. Completely. No, the whole thing with Gene was we would try everything all the time. We would start something, and then in a verse, and he would stop it. Ace was like, nope, we're going to do what we know and how we know it. We're going to be great and do that whole thing. And let me tell you something. Man, we have, like, lived and loved every moment of that whole scenario of Gene winging it and Ace not winging it. I mean, come on. You're playing with half a Kiss. And that's like the biggest thing. Like I high five myself, my 10-year-old self, all the time.
It's so awesome.
I love both of those guys.
And yeah, speaking of your 10-year-old self, Ryan, what other musical influences were hitting you at a young age besides Kiss?
You know what? I'll tell you something that was crazy. You'll think this is weird, but it is true. I always had like an obsession with like synthesizer noises and stuff like that. So when I heard like the horn on the beginning of Running with the Devil, I was obsessed. When I heard the siren on the beginning of Riding the Storm Out, obsessed. I loved all that stuff. It was crazy. I loved stuff like that. I just was like always, but as a kid, like I love Neil Sean. I love Gary Richrath.
Right.
Fast forward, you know, man, I can remember like buying Skid Row record the day that Slave of the Grind came out, and it was debuted as number one on the Billboard charts. So I was living in Florida, is I was 20 years old. You know, it was just like, man, my musical spectrum goes so far and swings back and forth so wide. You know, Craig Ross from Lenny Kravitz's band is like one of the baddest motherfuckers on the planet. I love when a city influences a player like a New York guy or whatever. So, man, I'm all over the place. You know what? I love Marty Robbins and country music. I love the whole thing.
Yeah. Hey, you mentioned Gary Richrath. There was a certain burst that he had that was called the Richrath burst, Les Paul, that was considered one of the best guitarists. And I love to hear you mention him. And I swear I was just talking about him the other day. And what made you like him? Because I you're one of the first people that I...
Because he was the king of what I kind of consider the pentatonic, major minor pentatonic guy, and you can sing his solos were a song within a song. Kevin Cronin was so great at constructing a beautiful melody, and as the minute you heard it from a friend who, all of a sudden, Gary Richrath had a guitar solo that complemented that so perfectly and was so awesome and such a great guy. And, man, I hate that he died tragically and everything, but, man, that fucking guy was so cool. And the way he wrote a guitar solo and everything, it was just a good guy.
I never told this on Talking Metal, but the REO Speedwagon was literally one of the maybe – first few concerts I ever went to, because they came to my hometown of Johnstown, Pennsylvania. So I've been a fan of theirs forever. And the first time I did, I had a chance to say hello to him, and that was an honor for me to do that.
Good.
Now, you mentioned Skid.
By the way, oh, go ahead, Skid Row.
No, you go.
No, I was going to say just real quick. One of the other great things is like whenever you get a chance to watch anything about REO Speedwagon and listen to them talk about the times when they were so struggling so hard, but then they looked at the hotel room window one day and saw people lined around the block. That's why we all play guitar. And I just love stuff like that. And it's just like a really, really good story. They were just like a really good band.
No doubt about it. And you mentioned Skid Row. Now, Ryan, you played some gigs with Skid Row, right?
A little bit. They're friends of mine. And it's, known the guys for a long time. We met them because we opened for them. Adored the band a long time. Big Guns is just fucking nuts. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Right.
What a great opening track for a debut album. I just love it. And I love the guys. And I've been around them forever. They're good dudes. And, you know, so overlooked is something like the last record that had Beat Yourself Blind. And just... Come on. I mean, we're all hard rock fans here. John, I've seen your band a million times. We've all been influenced by it.
Excellent. Absolutely. I'm a massive fan of that first Skid Row record. Such a great record.
Oh, my God. It's just nuts.
Amazing. Sebastian's vocals, amazing. Just really a great combination.
All this makes sense.
Much good stuff. Yeah. Really works well together. Ryan, so you're a professional musician. You've had a lot of just amazing moments besides, you know, being on stage with Ace and Gene at the same time, literally. What are some other career highlights for you?
I'm going to tell you, one of the biggest things that I love so much was just, you know, growing up in it's funny. I grew up in Topeka, Kansas, which is right in the middle of the country. Right. So I always tell people I grew up in Central America because it's Central.
Central America.
It's America. Right.
I love it.
So anyway, the thing was, though, was, man, it was just so much growing up wanting to do something and always reading Hip Parader and Circus and everything. And like looking at my favorite bands like your Zeppelins and your whatever's and the whole deals and
cheers,
you know, your.
I like that. Here, cheers.
Just Skid Rose.
Bring that back. Let's do a toast.
I'm going to do a toast.
It's actually a margarita.
Hey, can I show you my friend who's here real quick? Hey, Skid Rose here. Look.
Hey, how are you? What's going on?
What's up, dude?
How are you, guys?
But anyway, we were talking about like favorite memories of the whole deal. Man, it was just growing up there. It was, it, I was always in trouble. And I was in trouble because of the sense, because nobody liked what I was doing. And everybody that said they supported me, I understood that they had to say that. But I knew what people said behind my back. I knew what people said in front of me. I knew who was true and I knew who wasn't. And man, the whole thing was like, I was just always on point to be a guy in a band. And I always wanted to be a guy in a band. And leaving where I grew up and moving to another city and the whole deal, it let me just reinvent myself. And I think that you guys have done that too. It's just,
well, Ryan, the one thing that I want to say in front of you, and it, because everybody, you know, everybody in the business side of our team Ace knows this, and Team Gene, but and Jeremy and Phil both told this story before, but you're the guy who made this happen. And the big thing is that you're the guy that Gene Simmons, the person that all of us, I don't know anybody who doesn't love, yep, Gene Simmons, Gene Simmons, who only likes and respects a certain type of a person.
Right.
He respected you enough to say, Ryan, put together a band for me and just go for it. And you did it. And
you're right.
How did that even happen? Like, tell that story, because I think that's amazing. I don't know anybody else that can say that in the entire world, that Gene Simmons says, I want a band, and I'm going to trust one guy, Ryan Spencer Cook, to put that band together.
Yep. And I thank you for recognizing that. I thank you for recognizing that. What happened was, Doc McGee asked me to be on the Kiss Cruises, and we were on all of them. And then Gene would watch every night that I played with my band. And what happened was, and I'm giving you the Reader's Digest version because I don't want to bore everybody with everything. But what happened was, he goes, listen, you've done great here. I like what you're doing. Any chance that you would want to tour with me? And if you would, could you put together a band? Again, I keep saying this over and over, and it's retarded, but I high-fived my 10-year-old self so hard,
yeah,
I couldn't stand it. And when I walked out of his, after lunch that day, I was standing about 2 feet taller than I normally
you
did.
You should be.
And you and I are on the same page about Kiss and everything, and having that happen was just such a great moment. It was like that whole thing where I had a football coach when I was a kid that always told me, visualize what you want and make it happen. Man, you guys, you have no idea, you guys. All I ever wanted in my life was to be my band to open for Kiss. That's all I ever wanted.
Wow.
That's all I ever wanted. And it didn't happen. And, you know,
almost better than that.
Yeah.
Because you played with half a Kiss.
And guess what? And guess what? We ended up playing with half of the original Kiss. And I'm going to tell everybody that's out there right now, it's just like, what a dream, and what a good thing. And I'm just so thrilled. And by the way, I know a million people that like, text me and reach out to me on a daily basis and everything. And you guys, it's not lost on me ever. I am so aware of how great it is to play with the guys in Kiss. And it's two of them. And I love it. And I appreciate it. And I'm never, ever, ever going to pretend for a minute that it doesn't matter, because that's all I ever wanted my entire life.
Absolutely. And Ryan, now I want to ask you about Hair of the Dog. And I know you guys have something new out that includes a new 2020 remix. Tell us about the newest Hair of the Dog and everything that's going on with that band, which is, you're the lead.
Sure. So I was in Hair of the Dog forever. And Desmond Child actually talked to me in Nashville, moved me out there, got me in the band. So what happened? Here's the Reader's Digest version. We put out three records. And now what happened was everything, all the, now that everything's done, all the rights have reserved or have come back to us. Cool. So now everything's available again on iTunes, Spotify, everything, the whole deal. And you can, everybody can get it now. And it's just, we're happy to re-release everything. And I want to tell you all that no one knows this now, but I'm going to say it. It's going to be available on a double gatefold vinyl version.
That is amazing. That is, we love that. We both love that.
We're thrilled about that. So it's great. But no, man, Hair of the Dog was, you know, 10 years of my life. And we're thrilled that it's coming out again. And can't wait for everybody to hear it. It's great. We love it.
I can't wait to get the gatefold. I can't wait to open the pull the plastic.
Oh, you're gonna love it.
Open that up and look at it. That's what we loved, and I know you loved about going to the record store and buying a physical record back when we were
absolutely,
you know, younger.
Absolutely. I love it. Yeah, it's great.
And Ryan, where's the best place people can get in touch with you online? Is there a website, social media page, or?
You know what? I'm going to tell you right now, on Instagram, it's RyanCook1969. And on Facebook, it's Ryan Spencer Cook. Also, we also have a new Hair of the Dog page, which honestly, I can't remember the name of right now because it just was launched today.
You've got to search it. We'll find it out.
We'll figure it out.
We'll put it in there.
And TalkingMetal.com, we'll put that in the show notes for today's episode, guys. And Ryan, I wish Gene would, I know, you know, we're in this weird time where there aren't a lot of live shows going on, but I wish he'd do more shows in the New York City, New Jersey area. Cause I don't really feel, I know you did one out in Long Island with him, but I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, that he's played New Jersey or New York City.
It's been a while. You know what my dream is? I would love if we did a Beacon Theater.
That would be amazing. Oh,
that's a great venue. Right.
Yeah. It would be absolutely amazing. And I love that you pull out, that you guys talk to Gene, you get him to do some of the off the beaten path tracks. I was so excited when I saw the video of Charisma, you guys rocking that. How about, here's a couple. Oh, how about Tunnel of Love? Would love to hear that off the song.
Oh, I love it.
Betrayed is always a good one.
Off I love Betrayed.
Those are two that I'd love to see in the set list. I mean,
I'm for
like
Betrayed.
You did with Ace. Oh, I saw you do with Ace. You played the whole 78 solo record here in New Jersey.
Yeah,
I would love Gene to do that because I was a massive fan of the Gene Simmons solo record. You know, Living in Sin.
Oh, I love it. I'll tell you something.
Wish Upon a Star. Hear it all live.
Yeah, I love that. And I'll tell you something funny about Gene. Like, if we were to say, Gene, hey, let's do the whole solo record. He would go, well, you know, I think it's a little bit too poppy.
Really? That's funny. That would be wild. I think that would be hard to learn. I mean, those songs, there was so much different styles, you know, different material on there that I think as a musician, I would be like, oh my God, this is a challenging project to learn that whole record. It's a great record, but to me, it would be hard to learn all that stuff. You guys are so good that you can learn.
If you look at the guests that were on that record, it's like Chaka Khan, Cher, Joe Perry, Rick Nielsen. I mean, it's like a crazy.
Was Helen Reddy on that record?
Who?
Remember Helen Reddy?
Possibly.
I think it's 70s person.
Yeah.
That's a great record.
I love it. Ryan, I think it's all good news.
Yeah. So, Ryan, now what's up for you in the next? I mean, okay, I know you saw the. Here's what happened today. I post a link, or I shared a Facebook post.
I shared it.
Yeah, and you shared the post, and then it went crazy. Rolling Stones saying Ace Frehley band to come back out in August. So the what everybody wants to know is this really happening? And I think both of us are saying we hope so, right?
You know what, John? I have always been glass half full.
Right.
Right.
I
will always remain to be glass half full. I hope so. I would love it. I want everybody to be safe and be okay.
It's an outdoor show or indoor show?
Indoor.
I have no idea.
Indoor.
Yeah. So there's two shows in August. There's a place in near Pittsburgh called Jurgles in Warrendale. It's really funny. Warrendale, PA. And the reason that's funny is that the next show is in Ohio, in Warren, Ohio. So Warrendale, okay. Warren. And they have nothing to do with each other other than they're close to each other. Both are indoors. The Warrendale gig at Jurgles is more of a club. Almost like what I would say, Mark, you know this, Mexicali Live. I'm trying to think of, Ryan, how to explain that to you. Basically, Mark, how would you explain Mexicali Live to Ryan?
Yeah, a club that holds, I don't know, probably get a couple hundred people in there.
Well, I mean just the vibe. It probably holds thousands of people, maybe 1,500 people, 3,000 people. But it's more of not a theater. Whereas the place in Warren, Ohio is a full-on theater, of the theaters that you guys, like a Beacon Theater. Ohio's a Beacon Theater. Warrendale is a club, a really nice club, almost like Joe's Live in Chicago, similar to that.
Okay, got it. Sure.
So both of these are indoors. The thing that's, and Mark, it was my fault that I kind of threw out Mexicali Live. So Mark gave the right description of Mexicali Live, and it was my fault that I threw that out. But the thing is that here's what's happening. We don't really have the details from Jurgles in the Pittsburgh area in Warrendale, but the people in Warren at the Robbins Theater have really put out some information that was shared on the internet today about what they're going to do and what they plan to do to protect the fans and the band. And let's hope that it happens. And you know, we of course want everybody to be safe. I think you guys are eager to get out there. I'm eager to get out there. I know Ace is eager to get out there, but you know, we just got to make sure everybody's safe.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Agreed. Cool. Well, Ryan, it's been great hanging with you, talking with you tonight. Thank you for joining the stream.
Always.
And we'll have this up in podcast form. It'll be audio only. And then we'll also be posting the video of this to youtube.com/talkingmetal. We encourage everyone to subscribe to that page.
I love it.
And then once we get that cleaned up version of this, it's going to go back on Facebook as well, because normally, as you know, we do this live. Something changed today. And, I have a feeling that we use Zoom, of course. A lot of people are doing Zoom meetings. I have a feeling that something changed between Zoom and Facebook, and that prevented us from going live tonight. We've went live for the last several weeks with no problems, and then today suddenly it doesn't work anymore. So we're going to figure that out. We're going to clean this all up. It's going to look great. And Ryan, we thank you so much for coming on with us. I respect you so much. For everything that you've done, and I know how hard it is, and believe it, one thing that we didn't mention is that not only does Ryan musically direct, he plays, but he's also a tour manager in itself, and when he's out on the road, he handles a lot of those duties as well. So Ryan, and you've done it with Gene, I mean, you've handled all that stuff with Gene, and I know you know what you're doing, and I respect you highly.
Thank you.
I'm super glad that we're buddies, and I can't wait to see you on the road.
I love it. That's very kind of you, and thank you, because you know what? We're all good together.
No doubt.
We're all good together, and you've always been so helpful with me, and thank you, guys. And I'm so happy to see you guys. Thanks for having me on the show. I love it. Have me back, okay?
We will. Absolutely, we will have you back. Okay. When we figure out how to get this to go live again, we're going to redo it.
Maybe I shouldn't say this, Ryan, but I got to tell you one thing I like about you. Okay. You come on here, you're doing shots, you're hanging with us. You wouldn't believe half these dudes come on here. They're like, let me go get my non-alcoholic beer and stuff like that. Yeah. I'm just like, what the hell is this?
We're
all about having a drink, Dash vodka.
I'm drinking, and I got to say this, I'm drinking Dash vodka out of a vodka bottle cut in half. How cool is that?
Bud Light.
by my cousin, Hank Reeves.
I love it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
I know you guys.
Cool. We'll see you on the road.
That was Rachel Bolan?
He left. He left.
Tell him we said hello. How about that? We had an appearance of Rachel Bolan and Skid Row.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I adore you guys.
Take care, Ryan. We'll see you soon.
Next one. Rachel will come to the next Talking Metal Live stream.
Tell me. We'll have our act together by then.
Yeah. All right. All right.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Ryan. So, John, you know who else I want to get on the stream? Anne Bolan, right? Simon Wright's girlfriend from Hellion.
Yeah, we should definitely get her on.
We should get Rachel Bolan. We should get Anne.
Bolan. I think it's Anne Bolan. Wait, is that what it was? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we should get her. It does suck. I'm literally getting dozens of people saying, "Where is the stream?" Because I
I know. I wish we could just put this up, but if there's that phone call in there that's no good, maybe I can quickly try to edit it and just put out a stream once it's done. But I'm not even sure, and we'll edit this out. I'm not even sure actually how to do it. So here's what happens when we stop this, which we should probably stop.